This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
That's the one day. The Yesh Mishayimah. The second day is Shemitza Beis Esrogim Mitnas. He finds two Esrogim to bind. Here he's talking about if he finds to bind. The first one is talking about Inkono Esrogim. Even if he purchased it already, he's got to go out. He answers, if he finds two to buy, one is better than the other, he should buy the better one, provided it's not more than a third more expensive. There seems to be a kula and a chumra here. The kula is if this applies only if you haven't yet purchased it before. But if you've purchased it, it's much better for the loshon of the shuhor, that you don't have to spend the money. The chumra is that it's not only that the base point, the starting point is not a beitzim or tzemes, but any two esrogim, the mitzvah hidu would apply. We need to appreciate that the mitzvah hidu is a chiyuv. This is not, people sometimes think that hidu is a voluntary thing. Hidu is not a voluntary thing at all. Hidu is a mitzvah in shulchan aruch.
In esrog.
No, well, at this point in esrog, but as we'll see, that the mitzvah of hidu. The mitzvah of hidu is a chiyuv in shulchan aruch. One has to be mahadir. Says the Mishnah Berurah in Kono, kedei lahasbir heitev tam hashnei days, akdim not yisa b'gemara. In order to explain the 2 days, clearly I shall start with explaining what is the Gemara says. Hidu mitzvah shlish b'mitzvah, v'yishu b'shem v'abein etam, v'u adei arishon ha-shinistu b'shem gemara. She'eno yotzein lomar she'yish lechon of shnei esregim ha-shnei sifrei terev echad hori yosem mechavir. She'itztorech machmas mitzvah hidu lo yisifat shlish b'mecha. In the name of Rabbein Etam, it says it doesn't mean that there is an opportunity to buy two mitzvahs. Esrog or Sefer Torah, one better than the other, that you have to buy the better one. Because if that were the case, there is no limit, there are no shiurim to this mitzvah. If you always going to buy a better one, what is the shiur? You never know when you've got an esrog with which you yotze the paladez. One was just big enough, and the next one was a little bit bigger. On this it is said that you've got to add a third because we're afraid that it will shrink. It's the first time that we hear such a story. The purpose is not just to be... Sorry?
But
Tosfos didn't say Shema Yismayit Hashir, did it? No, Tosfos gave the same thing, but it's applying to size. But this svara of Shema Yismayit Hashir, that we've only got here, and that's a big nafkimina. That means that we only, then the mitzvah hidur, or this aspect of the mitzvah hidur, only applies with those elements which can deteriorate. But elements which cannot deteriorate, there's no mitzvah hidur. So, for example, if it's a question of a big sefer Torah or a small sefer Torah, what is a big mezuzah or a small mezuzah? So a big mezuzah is better because there's less deterioration in the big mezuzah. But imagine that the script was the same size as the cloth was big. There's no mitzvah hidur there. There's no mitzvah hidur there. Tzitzis. Size would then not be an element. In other words, what we're worried about is the potential of deterioration rather than a question of size.
And if there's anything you can do to prevent the deterioration,
and if you could stop the deterioration to the point where you're sure
you could plastic or something like that.
Yeah, that you wouldn't have to be worried about it. Yeah.
His name is the
Mishnah Berurah. Doesn't do anything in anybody's name. Looks like his own svara, which is unusual for the Mishnah
Berurah.
No. He gives that otherwise, what's the benefit of buying? Why buy a bigger one then? What the Mishnah Berurah is saying is there is no mile in bigger. Bigger is not better. The only thing that is about bigger is that it's safer. That's the thing, but there's no havamin in Chofetz Chaim's mind that there's a hidur in size. Chaim didn't live in our days and he didn't live in Johannesburg. But in our days, with the shiurim and size and everybody becoming obsessed with size, that's why we find this so difficult to understand. But what's that? That's not the deep size of everybody. So the right shiur is not the right shiur. That's it. You have a big kiddush cup, which is three times the shiur. That's how you do.
How is it
being
done? If you want to make sure that it doesn't become a shiur, how can it be a hidden?
That means you mark it. You want to buy an esrog which is not only yetzer with now, but one where there's no possibility of it becoming. It means you mahadra in your mind. It's an intellectual hidden. you're prepared to spend more money so that it won't become possible during Yom Tov. You care more about the mitzvahs.
But isn't there something that's over and above what you need now rather than what you might be waiting
for? No, well, we see not. The Mishnah Berurah says, what does it mean over and above what there is now? What's now is kosher. What's the hidden on kosher? More kosher. There's no such a thing. Up here, Loch, it's good. So what's... There's no difference, says the Mishnah Berurah, between an Esrog Kebetzel and an Esrog Keragbi Bol. The only difference is Shema Yismai. There is no other difference. That's how the Mishnah Berurah comes out, which is a big chiddush. It's a chiddush not intellectually. Intellectually, it's obvious. The chiddush is that we don't think that way. That we've allowed ourselves to be duped. That's the chiddush. And you're thinking, if somebody comes into shul with a massive Esrog, what do we all say? How much should you pay for that one? The answer should be, why should I pay extra for it? It's not more kosher than anything else.
Actually, we're not into the area of hidur, we're into the area of lifna mishur sadinim.
That's what hidur is. That's what the Chofetz Chaim holds. That's what the Rabbi Eben Tam holds. That's the hidur. There are many different types of hidur. Hidur mitzvah is brought many times in the Gemara in many different contexts. But this particular hidur that we're talking here is where we're talking about size. Nowhere in Shas is size an element except here, according to the Shita of Rabbi Natan and Tosfos, and even that says the Mishnah Berurah is not because there's validity in size, but only because of the Chashash of Shem Yisrael.
So surely then our standard mikvah should be a third more than 40 sof.
It's more our standard mitzvah. The mikvah is a lot more than the 40 sof, because it's just not comfortable to use a mitzvah for the 40 sof.
Okay, that's after saying.
A mitzvah hidah dechanami. You could then tie it. The same with the fire. The mikvah should be bigger. Yeah.
That's even worse. That's water.
Doesn't say it must be a third bigger. Tosfos says it must be a third bigger. The Shulchan Aruch did not say that. Shulchan Aruch said in motzo godol mimenu mitzvah lohisif ad shlish milagav bidmei harishon. If you find a bigger one, you've got to be prepared to pay a third in money for anything bigger. Even a little bit bigger, when you're dealing with a boundary line, whatever you can get bigger is a hidur. But if you're not dealing on the boundary line, there is no benefit to big. No hidur, excepting in as much as if the parchments inside are bigger, and so they don't deteriorate so easily, maybe they're not folded up so tightly. That's the only way. That's the same way. That would then be the same way. But not because there's a benefit in size. And in this way, even if you've already bought the little esrog, it's a mitzvah to be machlif for the higher one. Why? Because there's a chashash you might not be able to be yetzirah through sukkah. It's a serious chashash. This is not just a matter of hidu. This is a matter of having an esrog which is safe. V'yesh mefoshim oid, and there are other perushim. But we're not talking about mitzvahs that deteriorate like Esrogim. We're talking about all mitzvahs. So the Mishnah Berurah learns that's the yesod of the machloekis between the Rambam and between the Tosfos and Rashi. Not whether it's size or whether it's value. The machloekis is Esrog an example of a type of mitzvah which lends itself to deterioration, or is Esrog an example of all mitzvahs? That's the machlokes. If it's all mitzvahs, then it's got nothing to do with deterioration, it's got nothing to do with size. So you want to say, she is damning the fun of echad hodor yusim mechavir, it's a qualitative thing. Mitzvah lahadir akara hodor loisi bashlish bedomer bezer adeh ashneer shimuskeris. So that's the question. Is our Gemara talking specifically about an esrog and other potentially diminishing mitzvahs? Or is our Gemara talking about all mitzvahs, whether they can deteriorate or not? There is still a mitzvah of hidur and shlish, just in terms of completion of quality. Good evening, Reb Hugh. Now at this point, have a look at the Biur Halacha. In Kona, I'm Mishnah Berurah b'Mashik Kusav Nishenir Ratzon Mashiach Shnevan Shmei Esrogim Ben Sefer Dovah V'Chulu. In Mikol Mokol, the Esrog Goluv Sheyesh Bo Chashash Psul. If there is a chashash psu in an esrei or lulav or anything else, this is the Mishnah Berurah. And this example of Iyur would apply with all mitzvahs. Where, for example, this is a very yisoidistic of Iyur Arot that very few people know. That if there is a machlokes chachovim on a particular halacha, af shehalacha de kosher, even though we pass in the one way, if you can find another one which is where you yotze the choladeis, there's a mitzvah to get after shlish in order to do that. Father, what he's saying is that there's such a thing as a halachic hidur as well. The two might look equally beautiful, but one you yotze afi halacha, it's okay because we pass in like so and so, although according to somebody else it would be possible, but we don't pass in that way, so it's kosher. But it's not mehudu. There's an element of having a hidur l'kol ades.
And we got our difficulty there about what the law for 2 weeks again.
That's not l'halochet. We don't pass them like that there. The horai, we put the hidur with hadassim is exactly have three. That's the way we pass them. That there's a philosophical and intellectual concept which is important. But in halochet, we don't pass them that way. In halochet, we pass them that. To be mekayim, so the Mishnah Berurah holds. Maybe not everybody would agree with this, but the Mishnah Berurah holds that to be mekayim all the days is a hidur. That's the basis of mahadrin meat. When we talk about mahadrin meat, what does it mean mahadrin meat? What's better about it? What's better about it is that there are certain days type of others is kosher lahalacha, but it's not. There are certain days I wouldn't be happy with it, so we don't ask in that way. We're fine. So it's kosher. But it's not mubudin. Comes out of point that provided that he did him attack, it's not people pulling the wool over one's eyes and just calling it mahadrin like with Israelim as well. It's mahadrin because it costs more. Provided that's not what we're saying, but it's mahadrin for reasons of Yidurim. And I've just come now from a meeting with the butchers to find out why the chickens are so expensive. And they went through the cheshbon. And by the time they were finished, I was asking them why the chickens are so cheap. Are you doing the Yidurim right? When you go through tackle the Hidurim, but we make them go through with the chickens, because the Bereshit doesn't require. Afi halacha, do you require it or not? No. But the other is that you do. So that's a Hidur. Chol of Yisrael, do you? Is Afi halacha, can you use ordinary milk in a country like this? Good. The apostles can say, yes, you can use it, but it's certainly a Hidur to use Chol of Yisrael. Comes out according to this, Mishnah Berurah, that provided the Mehudar is not more than 33% to 30% more than the regular, it's not that it's nice to go by them. There's a Chiyuv to go by them. The chiyuv is not as kashrus, and the chiyuv is not as esrei, and the chiyuv is not as cholavaku. The chiyuv is a special halacha of hidur mitzvah, tafreish nunvav. It's a different mitzvah in Shulchan Aruch. So a person comes along and says, for me, regular Beis Din is enough. The regular halacha is enough for me. I'm not mahadur. The answer is, then you're not even keeping regular. Because hidur is a siman in Shulchan Aruch. So what you're saying is, I don't hold by the siman in Shulchan Aruch. And that comes out of Yom. So Hidur is not an option. Well, that's what I'm saying. Hidur is a chiyuv al pialoche. But it's not a chiyuv in Hilchus Esrei or in Hilchus Kashrut. It's a chiyuv in Hilchus Hidur.
So the Nashmos is that if you drink
Chalavah, over a Mitzvah Asai. If it's not more than a third more than the regular, not a Mitzvah Asai, it's a Drabon. It's with Hidur. Design a Mitzvah Hidur. Now, the only thing is that it could be that this is by Mitzvahs, by objects of Mitzvahs. Could be that it's by mitzvahs, as in this particular thing in the strict halachic sense applies by mitzvahs. Not by loving,
Those things that are different in the two types of shita, are those loving?
Yeah, those would all be loving. Well, it's a cheftashel mitzvah. It's a cheftashel mitzvah, and you can use a better one. I would have to look at the prima godim inside. I would say for Pashtus it is, because the whole thing is based on Zekei Liva and Veyu and so on. But I would say that the concept goes further. I would say the concept goes much further. The concept of Hidur goes further, even into regular mitzvahs where there isn't a Chetzah Shul mitzvah. But to say that it's actually that it's over this halacha, that might be a little bit shver to say. It's not on the on Fetzi Shabbatim. Maybe. No, less than around a kilo difference. It's not even a sixth in difference.
Chickens are 650 a kilo.
And there's less than a rand of difference between Mahadri and regular. What's happened sometimes, they explain to me, is the supermarkets do a special, or sometimes they even dump if they've overbought. That there can be no control of. But if you take the regular butcher selling Mahadri and selling on Mahadri, the difference is less than a rand. Chickens are expensive at the moment. Kosher chickens are expensive at the moment. But that's not hidden as such. And also, you see, the principle here, Andrew, is that for a person to complain about hidr being expensive, if it's less than a shlish, it's not valid. That's the principle. That's the price of hidr. That's not valid to complain that it's less than a shlish. And I find that this is not just a halacha in mitzvahs. This is a reality. And anybody who's ever bought something or sold something will know. How good a salesman do you have to be to convince a person who's coming to buy a suit of clothes for 600 rand to rather take another suit which is visibly superior, right? You touch it, you feel it, you look at it, which is visibly superior for another 200 rand. How good a salesman do you have to be? Yeah, from 600 to 800. It's easy. If a salesman can't do that, he should be out of the job. So we are prepared to do that. Everybody understands that. You go and buy a hi-fi set. The fellow says, look, I know you wanted to spend 5,000 rand. Sit down and listen to the one for 5,000 rand. Now I'm going to play you one for 5,500, for 6,500 rand. I know it's much more than you planned to. But listen, if you don't share the difference, take the one for 5,000. And you sit down, tremendously. What are you going to do? You can't buy that. You either walk out with nothing, and then you come back a week later for the 6,500 one, by which time it's 7,000. or you walk out with the 6,500 one. So it is. So we do that all the time. Except with mitzvahs. The moment the hidur, we don't want to pay for hidurim. That's the problem with our relationship to mitzvahs. We don't look at our mitzvahs the way we look at everything else.
Would this apply?
Sure.
So, if the left hand shouldn't spend more than a third between ordinary and best?
Well, then you'd have to come onto the sheet of the taz that we did, where, remember what the taz says? Your base becomes what you would normally buy, because we don't pass when not in the town. So your base will become like you normally buy. The same as the hi-fi set. You can't say, look, you can get a hi-fi set at Morkel's for 799 rand. So for Hindu, I'm prepared a B&O, the latest B&O, I'm prepared a shlish more to pay. I'm prepared to go up to 1,000 rand. More than that is crazy. So they'll just call you an amoritz and they'll throw you out, that's all. And the same here, a person comes along and says, look, you can get a pair of tefillin for $50. I'm prepared to go to $75 for Mahudu. I'll call you an amor, it's quite likely, and throw you out. But if you say, look, that's the kind of tefillin I would normally buy for myself. Do you have anything better? And he says, yeah, I've got something which is still better. And you look and you can see the difference. And it's not more than a third, and you're hired to take the better one. It's not an option, and you're hired to take the better one.
In the time it was difficult, though, I had a difficult time on Sunday because the base, what you did spend, would often include the hidden elements.
It doesn't. It doesn't. When you, it goes, there are two levels of hidden. There's what you think is hidden until you see a ready mahudu. Of course, everybody goes in. When you're going to buy your 600 rand suit, yeah, the last time you bought a suit was a year or two ago. For 600 rand, you can get a mahudu. So you go in with your 600 rand expecting to get mahudu.
So you actually go in with, the problem is you used to go in with 400 grand because that was my original last time you bought. And then they stretch you to 600.
Good, so then 600 becomes your...
And that's the ordinary, and then you saw it to go back.
No, that you don't have to do by mitzvahs. If 400 is exactly what you were going to buy, you look at a 400 suit and you say, I would take this, I would wear this. If you look at a 400 suit and you say, I would never wear this. No matter what it costs, it's not for me. I'll show you 500 ones, still with 600, yeah, this I would wear. Not the best, but this I would wear. Now I'll show you an 800 one. Then your 600 is your base, not your 400. And it is like that. That's how we buy. That's how we work with money. So the shlish is really a very realistic. This whole mitzvah of zekeh l'manveh is simply treating the Ribbono Shel Olam like we treat ourselves, not like we treat others. For others, the mitzvah of hiddur is not so important. When we're buying a present for somebody else, then it's easy not to go out the shlish. You start making a cheshbon. The other person didn't see the two. He only knows the one. And when I saw the one without seeing the other, I also thought it was good. So then there's no reason to go out the shlish. But when we're buying for ourselves, then we do go out the shlish. We should treat the Ribbono Shel Olam the same way. Let's go on in the Mishnah Berurah. Let's just look at the next Bir Halacha first. But Tzimtzum, the first Shita Zu, according to the first Shita, in Godel Yosei Mekashir, if your first one is already bigger than the Shir, Afa Pishi Shneim Boim Lefon of Keechel Diknes, then even though you get an opportunity to buy two at the same time, a bigger one still, and your big one, Mekomakom Enzo Lefdiknes Ahodah, you don't have to buy them. Since the Shulchan Aruch seems to take on the pashtus like the svara, mashmedach tisvira lei lahalacha. That's how the Shulchan Aruch holds lahalacha. She shita harosh. That's the shita of the rosh in Tosfos. Bahagro the diuroi mashma denoite lahayeshemi. It's mashma from the Vilna Gaon that he goes by the yeshemim. The rosh is Rashi. Yishum the Yerushalmi the Furush came because the bro brings him Yerushalmi that supports the view of Rashi. The chen ha Eliyahu Rabba machmir b'ze and the Eliyahu Rabbi's machmir. Ka yeshemim. אחר כך מוצא סביך למושה על ירושלמי, שכוסת גם כן דם מהירושלמי מוכלגת כרשי, בין עשור הפלי מושה, it also says that ירושלמי is like רשי, וכוסת אוי, דבינין הכושי שאיקשו, אגב. So the Mishnabura Paskins like the second sheet. Shukunor of Paskins like the first sheet, the Mishnabura Paskins like the second sheet. In the back in the Mishnah Berurah, Esrei Shirogot says, but Simson Ayin b'Magen Avrom Shemitzadet the Lav Dafke Esrei. Even according to the first Shita, we're not talking Dafke about an Esrei. The Wadim Sefer Torah or Shefer or Kedoma Shikonol VaYol BeYirak Tshirim Tzumtzum. Any mitzvah which has just got on the borderline of the required measurements, VaChakach Mizdamen LeAfer Shu Godel BeShiro, and then you get one which is bigger. Mitzvah LaChalifa LoYisif Alavad Shlish. It's a mitzvah to change it into be Moshe BeShlish. Milagav says that we've done already the Rashba, what Milagav means. Let's go down to Dalit.
Where he says, Bagrova Biro Mashmat Note, is he the saying that the Grove is Note, or that Grove himself?
No, Grove is Note. It's Mashmat from the Grove that he is Note like Yerushalmi.
So, how could anybody disagree with Yerushalmi? One must assume that they knew.
The Pasman of the Babi can hold it as a machloch between Yerushalmi and the Babi. The Pasman is like the Babi, which is like not.
Even though your interpretation of the Bavli is just based on interpretation?
Yeah, so it's an interpretation of the Rosh. So that means according to the Rosh there is a Machlokes Bavli in Yerushalmi, you pass like Yerushalmi, the Vilna Gaon would rather not make a Machlokes. The Shulchan Aruch feels that that the Rosh's interpretation is so superior that he's not willing to compromise the interpretation in order to avoid the Machlokes. That would be the Machlokes between them. But it gives us a bit of flexibility to be maker. For example, if a person has got an esrei which is big, but it's not mahuder in the normal sense of the word, it's bigger than the shir. It's normal, not our normal esrei. That's the best that he can afford, and he really can't afford the difference to get a better esrei. So according to the first day in Shulchan Aruch, it's mekayim hidur mitzvah. Never mind it. The first day is mekayim hidur. So on the one hand, what I'm saying is that the new chumrah that comes out according to this is that hidur is a chiyuv. Hidur is not an option. But the kudah that comes out is once you know the halachas of hidur, it's very easy to be mekayim hidur. It's not like we think hidur is. You've got to get the absolute best in there are certain limits to it. There are gedorim to it. There are definitions to it. It's easy to establish.
What was that last part of the Gemara that said that you could go over the, or seem that you could go over the shlish?
If you've got enough money, you can go over.
But that's not called hidur.
That's sort of lifting mishur, but yes, that's still hidur, but that's not the hidur for which you're mechuyev. That's the voluntary hidur. The shlish is a chiyuv.
Does this imply that even if you're very poor, you have to?
Yes.
You have to borrow money from
banking. Well, that's we're governed all along. That's further on the Shulchan Aruch by the 20% maximum. Not to you don't have to spend more than 20% of your income on any single mitzvah, which is still a lot of money. So yes, even a poor person spends, and that's how the Yidden have always been. That's how the Yidden have always been. They spent a lot of money on mitzvahs. The only society I know where the frum people are mean on mitzvahs is Johannesburg, South Africa. It's strange. It's really peculiar. It's the only society I know. I don't say it's the only society that exists, but it's the only society that I know that the Yidden are mean on mitzvahs. Sorry? I don't know the rest of South Africa. The rest of South Africa, they I don't know. They're, because there's a frum community. I'm talking about the frum people. And not all the frum people, but here there is such a thing. Whereas in most places overseas, there isn't. Just the mitzvahs they spend. Not necessarily. With ignorance here. No, it's an inherent meanness. It's a small mindedness. There is a certain small-mindedness. The Litvishiyidim were never big businessmen. So here they've become big businessmen, but they've put their kirchas of Torah into business. But they haven't integrated the whole thing. But the same bigness that you have in business, you must have in Yiddishkeit. Although they've got it. If you look, what's interesting is, by the non-frum who become big businessmen, they're not mean on mitzvahs. It's the frum who mean on mitzvahs. Why? Sorry? It's the frum ones about mean on mitzvahs. Why is that? It's not mean, it's small minded. It's like a lack of heart, a rakhu sadas. Because they have a negative attitude to Gashmias altogether. A negative, it's sort of a Gateshead kind of a. There you put it also. It's a negative attitude to Gashmias. No, that's what they don't realize. An attitude to Gashmias, I'm not talking about becoming Magusha. I'm talking about an attitude to Gashmias, like we discussed in the name of the Yosef, an ease of spending. I'm talking about Harchova. You've got to realize that Harchova is a middle. You've either got it or you don't. If you have it, you have it in everything. If you don't, you have it in nothing. The guy who doesn't give his wife nice gifts, doesn't spend money on a good esrog, and doesn't give a lot of tzedakah, and doesn't spend a lot of money on himself either. It's a small, that's obvious. Doesn't have big ambition. He doesn't have big ideas. And you go to him with a wonderful business idea that he can really, you do this and you do that, and you paint a huge big thing, and he gets scared. Whereas the person who's involved in it has already a bit of a people need to. That's why I get so angry when the Baal Tshuva movement is goaded into an attitude of not becoming good at their professions and businesses, not putting effort into that. Because if they are becoming gedolim in Torah, then they get their rachmas from Torah. Doesn't matter, then they get their bigness from Torah. But if they're not, so I'm not sure how many of them have become gedolim in Torah. Better learners, less better learners. If we're realistic, no, not many people are becoming gedolim in Torah. We're talking about, particularly about the Baal Tshuva movement, but altogether. So the rachmas is not going to come from there, so you introduce narrow-mindedness. So his business is small, and his profession is small. And his mitzvahs are small. And everything small, it becomes cramped and cramped and cramped. He doesn't read anything. He doesn't look at anything. He doesn't talk about anything. And he gets smaller and smaller and smaller. Eventually, he's going to shrivel away. And then you see them actually walking into a room. You see them walking into a room. They stand. They could actually shrivel. They wouldn't. They're getting smaller and smaller. The personality is not growing. And that's something which is very, very disturbing. And you don't have that by the non-frum, and you don't have that by people who are dynamically involved in Torah. There's growth in Torah, it's also good. But then it has to be with God. It's going to finish a few masechtas, you've got to move it. It's going to be. And that means dedication. Just as a businessman doesn't become a millionaire without hard work. So in any area where you're going to develop rachus, you need enormous energy, enormous input. Part of the problem of our own Beis HaMikdash. It's relatively small hasogus. If we give a Shabbaton for 200 people already, that's already a big deal. The Babaji did a bigger service. Babaji didn't know what a service is. Or Samaya. Different asodas. Why? Because they're people. They're people at the top have asodas. It's part of their whole education. So they're not in business, but in institution building. They're in the business of building institutions with bigness. Why? Big. Well, Samaya is here for how long? 3 years. So what have they got that we haven't got? Absolutely. Well, that's the only thing. The only thing. What have they got that we haven't got? And look what they've done in 3 years. It's incredible. It's incredible. What's it? That's obvious. It's a different attitude. It's a different approach.
You could have put point.
Sorry?
You could have put point to something that the Baba Chan, but you wasn't going to.
The Americans have got it generally. You see it in the handwritings also. If you see, look at South African handwriting generally. What's the size of South African handwriting? Oh, small little handwriting. Everybody writes, generally people write small. And Americans, have you noticed Americans' handwriting? Fills the page! It's a sophist. It's a completely different attitude. And I think part of it has got to do with the South African environment, the whole larger mentality and being isolated in the bottom of Africa and being pushed into corners. All these things add up. It's a literature background with an English environment and Afrikaan mentality. All of it is shoved into one being, and it shows. Yeah, it's all part of the same. It's all part of the same thing. It's more asodis. But who gives it? The frum or the fry? This is the only community in the entire world where Torah tzedakah comes from the fry, not from the frum. In America, you don't go. Mishulah doesn't go ask from the non-religious, except a couple of the biggies who give because of tax deduction. So you don't get money from non-religious, obviously. It's the people who are in business, not the people who are in Torah, that are giving you money. Because they have asodis. Once they get involved in business, they have asodis. They're involved in big business.
How does one draw the line? So it's to avoid the problem of ending up with the 19 million men.
Very, very simple. Very simple. What you've got to do is, my brother asked me that question, how do you avoid becoming how does a Rosh Yeshiva avoid becoming a Mashulah? In mentality, not in occupation, but in mentality. You see it again, you see it here. Now these people with big hasogas have said to me that they've noticed the deterioration in money collectors. What's a deterioration? They said to me, in the old days a Rosh Hashiva used to come and they used to be elevated and stimulated, and the check was the byproduct. I used to go out, used to go away feeling after a meeting with the Rosh Hashiva, the Balabos used to go away feeling on a high. So it didn't hurt giving the money. It was easy. He says, now I feel drained. And I come, I've got to see them, and it's pleasant, and they're entertaining. So now the substitution for elevating somebody is to entertain them. You don't want it to hurt while they're giving money, so you distract them. And you entertain them a little bit. You tell them Maiselach, you tell them a few stories, you show them photographs of your children, and you make them laugh a bit. And that way you hope that it doesn't hurt. Which is right, it doesn't hurt until the moment they're out of the door. Then these Balabatim say, hey, phew, 500 grand. That's a lot of money. I wonder why did I even give it? And he feels drained, and he feels miserable, and he feels empty. Whereas when the Rosh Hashivas used to come, he used to go down, the 500 never came into it. He was walking on a high for another 2 days. So that's a difference between a Mashulach and an approach, and a Rosh Hashiva. You've got it in other areas. You've got it in the areas where you remember that Hanuman said here in the Shabbat Beis Medrash that his father never asked anybody for money. Remember that? He would talk about Polish, he would talk about Yiddishkeit, but he would never talk about money. And it came, if it didn't come, it didn't come. That's Rosh Hashiva, that's not a Mashulach. The Mashulach now makes his calculations already, looks around, figures out how much he can ask for, how much he can expect, what's going on. It's a business already.
Tax collector.
He's a tax collector. So the question is, how do you avoid becoming a Mashulach? And that's when your cheshbon is, number one, taking rather than giving. That's your one. That's the one area when your cheshbon is to take rather than to give. And number two, when you're working on building I'll put it to you this way. I walked into the Pond Village this last time we went into Israel, and I looked around, the yeshiva was bursting at the seams, and I said to Lezer Kahana, who was the Pond Village's grandson, I said, you know, I look here and there's a massive Beis HaMedrash, and it's full and it's packed. And in Telstone, there's a massive Beis HaMedrash and it's a shell, it's empty, but it's not being used. So he said to me, why do you think, what do you think the difference is? So I thought, I was about to say something, and he said, I'll tell you, my grandfather never built before it was full. Didn't build a building and then go and... The building is there just to fill the important things of the Talmidim, the learning. Not to put up the buildings and the institutions. That's part of the difference. That's where one has to be careful. What is the business of one's in this one? In the business of teaching Torah, but then there's such a thing as teaching Torah with Hachobah and with Hasogus. Or is one in the business of building institutions, and Torah is the commodity. And it's a different approach. It's very, very different. Very different. Before Osama started here, they consulted with my father about where they should start. What suburb they should start. So my father said, why do you want to start here at all? We need you in South Africa. Why South Africa? I said, we feel we've gained a lot from South Africa and we would like to put back into South Africa. We've taken a lot of money out of South Africa. We've had boys out of South Africa and we want to invest in South Africa. So he said, where are you considering? Where do you want to start? So they said, either in Sydenham or in Yeovil. So my father said, I don't understand. If your plan is to take more from South Africa, then it doesn't matter whether you start in Sydenham or in Yeovil. But if your plan is Taka to give to South Africa, then you should start in Surabim or in Bryanston or in Sandton. You should start where there's nothing. That's another thing. Where did Pond HaVisharov start his yeshiva? Where there was nothing. It wasn't a question of building an institution on the back of the others in Bnei Brak. It was a matter of starting where there's nothing, going out. That's where you started. The Biskarov wanted to consider staying in Haifa when he arrived in Yerushalayim, even going to Yerushalayim. There's such a thing as building for the sake. You've got to question all the time, what is the business that you're in? Are you in the business of building moistos, or are you in the business of Torah? If you're in the business of building a moistos, you've got to build it where you have most chance of success. If you're in the business of teaching Torah, you've got to do it where it's most needed. Might not be successful, that's not your cheshbon already. It's a different way of learning. It's a different outlook and mentality, and that's where you say the question of going wrong with 90 million. What business are you in? Are you in the business of borrowing and lending money? Are you in the business of building? What are you in? Or are you in the business of Torah? It's a different thing. And what gets subjected to what? What is kaveh when there's a conflict? Do you do what's best for Torah, or do you do what's best for the business? Those are the things that one has to watch all the time, but that's no steerer to the concept of Archove, because Archove is not a concept, that's the point I'm trying to make here. Archove is not a concept in Gashmis. It's a concept in everything. It's a personality trait which applies to everything or nothing. You've either got it or you haven't got it. And if you've got it and you go into business, then you'll do big business. If you've got it and you go into Torah, you'll do big Torah. Whether that big Torah is measured in terms of, take for example the Briskerov. How many Talmidim did the Briskerov have? He's got 50 at the height of his yeshiva. He used to have 50. Did he have Archon or didn't he have Archon? An enormous Archon. So how does it express itself? He never had a building. There was no building. Brisk didn't have a building. At 50 Talmud, 25 in a shiur, one shiur in the morning, one shiur in the afternoon, he used to repeat the same shiur twice. He wouldn't have more than 25 in a shiur. So where's the Archon? So Archon was in his dependence. His willingness to fight the system, to stand on his own, to be a voice, to be absolutely pure. That's the Hachovah. It expressed itself in a different area. Regardless, you looked at him, you saw the Hachovah. And a businessman could come and discuss a multi-million-dollar project with him and he could conceptualize it. It didn't bother him. Because he has the Hachovah. The Hachovah doesn't have to be expressed in physical bigness. But it must be expressed. It's so difficult to define. It's easier to see the narrowness than it is to see the breadth. That's what it is. You can identify narrowness more easily than you can identify breadth. It's a different thing.
I think that maybe the
on the left hand corner, conflict in that. If you have big masogas in Tata and big masogas in learning and development, there is a conflict.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying to you. You've got to have big hasogas. It's like you can have another. Doesn't mean you can have another in this, but not in this, and in this, but not in this. You can have all the other.
Yeah, but just like you've worked on that meter of now having big hasogas in.
Right. So then the big hasogas means I have now got to make a major contribution to the world. That's a big hasogas. Good. Now I've got to decide where I'm going to do it.
So I say I want to become very wealthy and very successful.
Fine. No, so the first thing is not a question of wants. So you've got to decide. With the kochis that Ribbono Shlom has given me and the opportunities he's given me, where can I make the biggest contribution? So Paul Reichman came to the conclusion in making billions of dollars and supporting issues. And I haven't heard any God of Israel criticizing him for that decision.
So what happened to someone in Al-Kahina had to decide that that was his area?
If that was Taka-based, that was his prayer.
Did you say that he would stop coming to Shirin maybe?
No, Paul Reichman learns Torah a good few hours every day. If you've got big asogas, you can do it. If you've got small asogas, you can. How can I learn as well? When am I going to do it? When? Who's got time? That's small asogas. You see it in your profession. Some of the guys have asogas. They take on. Some don't do it as promptly as they should, but still they take on. It doesn't bother them. When have I got time is not the issue. Time is a matter of organizations. If you take on more, you take more people to help you. Big hasogus doesn't mean that you work like a dog. Big hasogus means you hire other people to work and you use your head. Big hasogus is not I run around like crazy doing all the work. That's small hasogus. That's South African hasogus. That's the Frum hasogus. And very often the big businessmen who really are the big thinking people have got the most time. I met with one for the institute the other day, a man who in 10 years has built up an unbelievable one, everybody knows him, an unbelievable conglomerate. Employs 1,200 people, but each of the 1,200 are manager type people. This is high level employment. And he sits there and I ask him, what are you doing? What he's learning languages, he's studying comparative religion, he's studying this, he's doing this, he's a member of this society, he's chairman of that society, he organizes this, he's traveling overseas tomorrow for that society. So when do you do your business? So I don't need to do the business. I think. I just need time to think. And all these things stimulate my thinking. What I do for this company is the thinking. And just today I met somebody who worked for this man years ago, and I told him that I had dealings with him, and she said to me, this lady said to me, be careful, he can't take decisions. He's not a decision maker. And I said, you're absolutely right, and he knows he's not a decision maker. That's why he's hired decision makers. He's an intellectual, that's not his input. But he doesn't hold the company back because he can't make decisions. It's godless, it's our problem. The difference, you don't have to do all the work yourself. The person who's never got any time, what does that mean when they say busy people are always the ones with the most time? What does the concept mean? You analyze it. Everybody knows it's true, but then if it's true, it needs to be analyzed. How's it possible? It doesn't really mean busy people. It means people with Rafus Hadas have always got time because they're not limited by technicalities. And time is a technicality. It's a lack of organization at all times. That's how it follows. The person who says, I've never got money for this, and I've never got time for this, and I've never got the opportunity for this, is always talking about what he's never got. Person without our problem. Comes the question, can it be acquired? Is it something one's born with or one isn't born with? But I'm sure it can be acquired. I'm sure it can be acquired. And then if you notice, when you're with somebody who's got hachova, you feel while you're with him as if there's nobody else, he's got nothing else in the world to do. that's the way you feel. He's got nothing else to do but you. That's part of that, because he's not under this constant pressure. And the person starts telling you he's always under pressure, he's always under the whip. That's part of the smallness. Part of the smallness, disorganized.
Why is that form of education tends to encourage
the smallness?
Yeah. see movements professionally.
You see it very much. Depends also which professionals. I might have told you once when my father was having all that trouble in Cape Town. A Gorish minister, one of the cardinals there, whatever they called, came over to see him to sympathize with him, to carry him. So these things happened. So he said two clever things to him. He said, do you know who the person is who's behind all the mischief? So my father said, yes, I know who he is. He said, how many are there? So my father said, there's one. So he laughed. He said, no, then you haven't figured it out yet. Dosen va'aviram. They're always two. They don't make mischief on their own. You've got to find the other one first. And my father's right, and a few days later he found out who the other one was. In fact, it worked like that. One in the front and the one behind. And he said, that was the first thing that he said that was why. Always dosen va'aviram. It's not only one. The next thing he said to them is, he said, now these two people, after he found the two people, he said, what is their... So my father said, one is an accountant and one is an irrigation. But million than you're worried about sense. The time you're taking looking for it isn't worth it. Write it off. That's how a businessman thinks. And the irrigation engineer says, that is 1 millimeter out. Everything goes wrong. So he works with millimeters. He doesn't work with kilometers. He works with millimeters. If those people are leading a community, you've got to know the problems. Together for a second. So firstly, it's certain professions. Those professions which deal with measurement and are very quantitative, and the more precise they are, they're a wonderful discipline in a sense. But over-discipline creates this kind of atmosphere. And that's why one of the reasons that women... The opposition of going to university is not just learning up the cruises. There are more serious things than that. And this is one of the things which business doesn't do. Business is a different environment. I suppose one can have smallness in business as well, but the environment is a different environment. Things work differently and one's thinking is different. And that affects one in a different way. And there's big business and there's small business. But what I'm saying to you is don't compartmentalize it to the point where a person thinks that because I'm small in my business, that leaves me lots of time to devote to my Torah. That's absolutely absurd. You're small in your business, you're going to be small in your Torah as well. It's got nothing to do with time. And that's why this is such an educational mistake of encouraging Baalei Teshuva not to become good and organized and efficient in their secular lives as well. What people don't realize is the better they become in their secular lives, the more time they've got, not the less time they've got. They can then organize themselves differently. If you become a chairman of a conglomerate of different companies, you've got more time than when you're a one-man show, and you're running around carrying things and shipping and getting to the bank or the post office, and you think, wonderful, I'm dedicated to Torah, one-man show, I don't know big. And one would think that South Africa would encourage bigness with all the open spaces, and one would think that it encourages business, but it doesn't. It encourages smallness, and that's been part of the problem. Take, for example, two political figures, Smuts and F.W. Klerk, as much as we've seen of him so far, compared to all the other prime ministers that we've got. If I were to ask you, what is the Nafkimina? This is what the Nafkimina is, a willingness to take a risk, to try it out, to be big. Take a stride, see what happens, handle it when you get there. You don't always have to be walking on firm ground. Go ahead a little bit, try it out, see. You'll swim, you'll battle, it'll shape out some way or another when you get there. You're the person, I can't buy a house. Why can't I buy a house? I can't afford a house. If you work like that, you'll never buy a house. Nobody can afford to buy a house, ever. Can't get married, why? Can't get married. He wouldn't listen to this guy. No, it's risky, you know, you're going with the wrong person, and you've got to live with the person, and they're murdered and all the ones. We've got all the. all the bachelors here. So if you think that way, so you never get married. You'll never get married. A risk free existence is a small existence. Then you've got to draw yourself a little, make a little cage for yourself, and live in your little cage where there's no risk, and then you're okay. You know what's interesting is, I expected when Mandela came out, I expected he wouldn't have rakus. He's been in jail 27 years. Cooped up, yeah. And he came out, he's got it. He's got the rakus.
He was on Robben Island. Plenty of other space there. It's looking towards the...
Who knows what it is? Who knows? But it's interesting. A person comes out of such an environment. We live in our big fancy houses with open grounds and all sorts of things, and we've got narrowness. And here the Tzotzi comes out of jail. And look at it's unbelievable. No, but you think of what he was put in and what he was painted at for 27 years. I was speaking to somebody in the government. I said, you know, I've been reading the ANC book that you gave me 2 years ago. I said, I don't understand it anymore. So they said, ANC booklet 2 years ago. I said, yes, and I met your Dr. So-and-so, who was this, and I had a wonderful meeting with him, and I said, oh, yes, he was the specialist on the ANC. He's left, and the department's closed. Things change. But that's for 27 years, he was the Tzotzi in jail. And the Tzotzi in jail comes out, and he's taken first in the statue.
Because he was painted to be that, but the Maasai inside, he was doing doctrines, and he was thinking and learning.
Correct.
And
correct. It's not just a matter of not being grudges. It's a wealth anschauung which is just much bigger than one's own experience, and willingness to move out into areas over which one can't have control at this point, and a willingness to go and build and see and not be scared of something which is bigger than I am at the moment. That's the middah. It's a terribly important middah, and it bothers me enormously that it's not being developed, and it bothers me in the base of Medrash.
Do you feel that the Rabbi or the base Medrash is working on any particular areas
to develop them?
Yes, to develop.
In general, no.
Is there a mechanism? Surely that can form part of the roots of an enormous structure which will be in existence.
I need to think that
through very carefully. That's a fundamental problem.
I need to think that through very, very carefully whether it can be done in a structured way. Because you have the problem, once you structure it, you're back to limiting it. I need to think how the first question is, can it be developed? My feeling is, I haven't thought about it carefully enough. My feeling is, yes, it can be developed, and I think it can be developed in children, certainly. But I think it can even be developed in oneself. I'm sure, like any other middle, it can be developed. How one actually sets about it, that I need to. This breaking out, this lateral thinking, is part of the same. That's the intellectual equivalent. A willingness to go out of your mold in order to look at the problem from a completely different... In kids it's easier to develop it, sure. In kids, in the school system, it's a little bit difficult and so on. One has to actually find ways of countering that. But certainly it can be. I don't know. I need to actually think as to how... kids are encouraged to do his own thing and to try and to experiment. And it doesn't matter if he makes... Not to make such a big issue about failure. Not to make, on the other hand, the kid needs to feel that achieving results is important. But where the failure was not because of lack of effort, where the failure was he took a jolly good chance and it didn't work out. And the reason it didn't work out is not because of something that he did that he should have done differently. That's where he needs to be encouraged and built up, which in the school environment, of course, isn't done.
Is this part of what Rabbi Lipschitz talks about when he says that
just... What are you afraid of? If you don't know for sure you didn't sin, how can you say in love and gaiety? Which Chazal say mean that I was with love and I kept all 613 mitzvahs. So Ibn Ezra says, he was worried about a chet sheba machshava. Chet or a shegogo in machshava. A sin or a mistake in thinking. He knew he didn't do anything wrong. He might have thought something wrong. But he knows also he didn't think anything wrong. How could he have thought anything wrong? Yaakov Avinu. What he's not sure about is that he might have thought something that one of his premises are wrong. And if one of his premises are wrong, then everything is wrong. You remember we learned that the Gemara once with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was ill, and his Talmidim came in to visit him, and as they came in to visit him, he cries, he starts crying, and they say, what are you crying, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, what are you crying about? And he says, if I was going before a judge of Bosol Adom, a human being, to be judged, wouldn't I be scared? And what is a human being after all? He's alive one day, he's dead the next day, and you can bribe him, you can argue before him, you can try and appease him. It's not that serious, and if he does lock you up, it's only temporarily. And if he does execute you, it's only your body he can take away, he can't take away your neshama. Now I'm going before the Ribbono Shel Olam, who knows? If he executes me, that's my neshama itself. Question number one, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is worried about the execution of neshama. Is he worried that he's not going to get no Olam Habo? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is worried that there's no Olam Habo. And then he says, and furthermore, there are only two roads in front of me, one to Gehenna and one to Gan Eden. If you go before a human court of law, there are many different options. You might get off altogether. Or you might get, you're not going to get rewarded, that's for sure. You might get off. You might get a fine. You might get to jail. You might be executed. There's a full range of possibilities. For the Ribbono Shel Olam, he says there are only two gates. One gate leads to Gan Eden, and one gate leads to Gehenna. And I know I have to walk through one of those gates. Either to Gehenna or to Gan Eden. I don't know which. Question number two. So if the choice is Gehenna and Gan Eden, he is in a 50-50 doubt. He's absolutely, he wouldn't be surprised at all if after being judged, the Ribbono Shel Olam says that door please, and says Gehenna. He wouldn't be surprised. No more surprised than if the Ribbono Shel Olam says Gan Eden please. So he says, any of that, I don't know which one I'm going to go to. Oh, yeah, okay, shouldn't I cry? Question number three, why does he wait until the Talmidim come in to cry? What's all of his show? Why didn't they find him crying when they came in? It says, Kivan Shelo, when he saw them, he killed him, of course, then he started crying. Why did he start crying when the Talmidim came in? And Chaim Shmuel Levitz explains what he was afraid about. It was not that he'd done anything wrong, he knew he didn't do anything wrong. He knew he kept Halach, he knew he kept every letter of Shulchan Aruch. He knew he never wasted a moment that wasn't in learning, so what's he afraid of? Maybe a premise was wrong. So why does he cry when the Talmidim come in? And we can understand, he cries because when the Talmidim come in, he realizes the consequences. A wrong premise, if it's my own private life, a wrong premise, no, I made a mistake. For that you won't go to Gehenna. But to raise a generation of Talmidim who are themselves now teachers and are raising others, and all that on a false premise. If I've made a mistake, then I deserve Gehenna. And says Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, I don't know. How can I know if my premises are right or wrong? So there's such a thing as a toz b'machshava, or as a chay b'machshava, an intellectual mistake, which you can never be sure about. You can never know for 100% sure. So no matter what, that's why even immediately after Yom Kippur, as the ill is over, what do? We start straight away with Ma'ariv. No time for any chayt. And Ma'ariv, we start again, slachlonon, chalon, we start straight away, slachlonon, avin, kikatonon. But what chayt are we talking about? Minutes after the ill. And says, if your premise is wrong, then it's continuous. You're sinning all the time. But there isn't a moment that you aren't being chotek. The premise is wrong. And someone has to struggle as hard as one can to make sure that the premises are right. That's again the importance of the derech, or the hashkofa. To have some kind of basis. At least I know that's the way I was taught. It's a continuation of the way I was taught. So what's the worst that can happen is that I was taught wrong. Okay, but that's not entirely my responsibility then. At least there's something to rely on. Rather than to start to become creative. Innovative when it comes to matters of hashgacha. That's where one has to be terribly careful. That's where one has to be careful in picking up hashgacha from the street. That one is responsible for. So that's why the next block is Hanun al-Avid Islah. The Semech el-Atfilo Azois Tobis Aslicho. And the next one is the consequence of forgiveness. If Hashem forgives me, what's the next thing? Behi ha-Gulun v'mashven ha-Kudot. That's Gula from our present clothes. If Hashem will excuse us properly, then we know that there will be a Gula. So really what we should do is we should pause for a moment after that bracha, go to Israel. And if Hashem doesn't redeem us at that point, we know something wrong. Either our tefillah was not right, our slicha mechira hasn't been right, because we're asking for the whole nation. Slachmon Ravim is not just for myself, we're asking for the whole nation. Since the Kuzari, if Hashem will give us proper slicha, then the next thing will be Gula.
The shoyr and keren is only muad after three times.
And what will you do after the mother of the man d'over that keren is more chomur than the others? According to them, I feel keren. Now I ask you, according to that man d'over, you can actually even learn keren from boer at one hour. And for my youth, it's a kaskos avinu, rachmonos. So why does the Torah take a list of all if they could be learned?
from Boer and one other, why does the Torah specify each one separately? But in Kusay. That's because each one has separate halakhas which would not have been able to be deduced from the general, from the outside. Says Rashi, the man the Omer Louis Farashay. This man the Omer, the Kirin was at least, says Rashi, I don't know where that is. The Yukud is saying, the Mashiach is the Mashiach.